Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
The stupid. That is 45% of the undecideds, John. They are the swingest of the swing voters. And they, as they always do, will decide this election.
And it's a fascinating thing. Now, how do you break down the stupids?
Well, ironically, it's a rather complex demographic. You've got your paste eaters, your numbskulls, your nitwits, your f-tards. People whose head gets stuck in jars when they eat pickles. That's a surprisingly large component. People who lose arguments to babies. Douche nozzles, tiger petters.
Now, I don't mean to interrupt. I'm not familiar with all the lingo. Tiger petters.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's people who go into zoos and they pet tigers. Let's push on. People who jump up and down on frozen lakes to check if the ice is strong enough to hold them. Shaved gorillas who've somehow acquired driver's licenses. The voluntarily lobotomized. And finally, Cubs fans.
Cubs fans. Now, they're... Cubs fans are considered a subset of the stupid.
Oh, absolutely, John. I mean, they've had 100 years to figure out that what they want will never happen, yet they still yearn for it.
And that is stupid.
Yes, it's very
because,
stupid.
Because the Cubs will never win.
No, that's right, John. The Chicago Cubs will never, ever win the World Series.
No, they won't.
They won't do it.
They've made God angry.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden center. And by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at mikenovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net. If you can't find him on Facebook, it's because he's got a paper bag over his head. Here he is, Mike Novak.
You know, sometimes, well, I just upset my guest, and that's not a good way to start any show on a Sunday. You bring somebody into the studio, and the first thing you do is you upset him because he's obviously a big Cubs fan, and he was just crying there on the other side of the room. Robert Neville, I'm sure the reason you're crying, though, is because the Cubs will never win the World Series. You do understand that, don't you?
Mike, you might be right, but...
and I'm not saying you're a subset of the stupid, either, you know. I'm just saying, you know, you're...
I've only suffered for 40 years.
And, you know, and then Heather just laughs.
Oh, I laughed very heartily. That was
she's,
very funny.
You know, and, you, and Robert, you got to understand, you're on the south side here. You know,
yes.
At this part of the world, there's a lot of Sox fans.
We've seen a World Series on this side and won it.
I apparently
in the past 10 years?
In the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Yes. Who knows, it might take another 88 before it happens again.
It probably will.
Probably.
So don't go.
So yeah, I'm not going to get bigger than my britches in that regard. But we got it. Yeah. I mean, we beat them to the punch. That's what we got from here to eternity.
Ouch.
Sorry.
But you know, and we might as well get right into it. You, Robert, you do live on the north side, but
right.
You're a member of KAM Isaiah Israel, which is on the south side. So there must be a few Southsiders there who are Sox fans, right?
We, Mike, we contend with this every time we're in the garden. There's a good argument between the two. camps. And every time I cross the Mason-Dixon line of baseball, I deal with the Southside Sox fans. It's a recurring problem.
That is Robert Neville, and he is with KM Isaiah Israel. They are on the south side of Chicago at 1100 East Hyde Park Boulevard. In fact, right across the street from where our president has a Chicago home. And you guys deal with that all the time, don't you?
We do. We installed a garden in the last spring under the watchful eye of the Secret Service and the Chicago police.
They didn't offer to help? Come on, grab a shovel. Get in here.
You know, they were terrific with rabbit control, actually. I think their presence alone scared away a lot of the rabbits and squirrels.
Yeah, the rabbits didn't want to get frisked. So
right, I think that's...
Robert and I were speaking the other day, and he mentioned that, and I totally took the bait. I said, "You mean Secret Service taking the target practice at the rabbits?"
No, nothing like that.
No,
it's just the possibility. The threat is worse than the fact.
Absolutely, it's true. But it has created. The temple there is involved in food production. You guys started a farm, and you had a lot to do with that, didn't you?
I did. Early in the spring, the former head of the Social Justice Committee of the synagogue convened a meeting in which she was soliciting suggestions for how we could green the synagogue. And the idea that I came up with was that we would plant a food-producing garden. We have, as I think I mentioned to you earlier, an abundance of good south-facing light. Turns out terrific soil. And,
really?
Oddly enough,
was it fill? Where did the soil come from?
It was undisturbed soil for at least 75 years, and it turned out that we had a very low lead content, which was serendipitous. But
did you manage that?
I think it's got something to do with that. There's not a lot of traffic on Greenwood, and at a time when there was a high lead content in gasoline, I think that there was. We benefited from the absence of a lot of traffic, and as I say, it was undisturbed soil for at least 75 years, and the nutrient content was terrific, and we sent away for a soil test, and it was confirmed, and so we installed this garden in the early spring, and
last year,
right, spring of 2009.
Okay,
correct.
And the idea being that it would be for the congregation or for the neighborhood or for learning purposes or what?
Well, sort of all of the above. Ideally, when we were getting efficient with food production, we'd be able to donate some of that food to local food pantries. Also, it had a remarkable effect in building community within the synagogue. It really turned out to be, and I think that was one of the sort of unexpected but serendipitous byproducts of that garden.
Well, that's not serendipity, actually. That's, I think, something that people who have done this for a while know, that you bring people together just like you bring them together to break bread. If you bring them together to grow the stuff out of which you break bread, you're going to have the same kind of community.
It's exactly what we found, and to a great degree, and it helped me sort of get more involved in that community down in the South Side.
That is Robert Neville, let's make sure I get this right. Okay, I'm not much into religion of any kind. All right, I called it a temple. You said synagogue. It's a congregation. What's the proper word?
I think both a temple or a synagogue.
Okay. They are having a special weekend starting this Friday, starting with, Will Allen, who is a superstar,
yes,
a rock star when it comes to the local food movement. He founded Growing Power, and if you go to my website, mikenovak.net/thisweek.htm, you can click right onto it from the homepage, this week's show. You can link to Growing Power and see a bio of Will Allen, former NBA basketball player, began Growing Power up in Milwaukee in 1995 or thereabouts. And, you know, a dozen years later, well, more than that, like 15 years later, finds himself winning a MacArthur Genius Award. Now, that's a guy I want to hang out with. Maybe it'll rub off. But the idea that it would be given for somebody who's doing urban farming is sends such a great message. And that, of course, it's infectious. And then congregations like yours start to do this, communities start to do this, churches start to do this. It's right. Just, it goes on and on and on. In fact, I'm starting to do this. I'm trying to get a community garden started in my neighborhood, on my block. There's a vacant property that's been, to say underused is a misnomer because it's been trashed. It needs to be cleaned up and I'm hoping that people in my block can do this. And since I have this show and this forum, I'm trying to get people to get. And not just that. I mean, even if I didn't have the show or this forum, I would be out looking around. I'm talking to Neighbor Space and talking to Green Corps and other people in the city about how to get this cultivated. And you started it a year ago, and as I mentioned to you earlier, you are you're right at the peak of the curve. You may not be ahead of the curve, but you're right there because this is where people are going. And so this weekend you are having a special presentation where Will Allen speaks on Friday at 7 o'clock p.m., and then on Sunday you have seminars and a workshop, right. And it's all about local food, how to get started, how to work with your community. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, I want to remind the audience that all events are free and open to the public.
Ah,
and,
good point.
And we encourage everyone to come down. The more people that hear Will Allen and hear this, what I would think of as a National League All-Star panel on Sunday morning.
Some people who have been on this very show. Some people who have not. And as a matter of fact, we can get a couple of the people you were talking about. Why don't we get those on, get them on the telephone, Heather? But go ahead.
So Friday night, Will Allen will speak at our Shabbat service. And the title of his talk is Growing Food and Community in the City. And then that will be followed on Sunday morning from 10:30 to 12:30, and again, these are all free and open to the public. We have a symposium, and we have a panel of seven people who have been heavily involved in equal access and affordable access to good, healthy foods and environmentally responsible and sustainable land use. And that panel on Sunday morning at 10:30. The panelists would be Connie Spreen, who's the co-founder and executive director of the Experimental Station. And I understand she's been on this show.
Yes, several times.
And Jack Spicer, a landscape gardener, and as he says, a preservationist by temperament. He is the force behind the 61st Street Garden on the South Side. Rachel Cohn, who's coming in from Washington, D.C., is the senior legislative assistant for the Religious Action Center, the Reform Judaism, and behind the initiative on what they call Green Table, Just Table. Jamie Calvin, who's a writer and human rights activist. Ken Dunn, who, in my opinion, is omniscient in all things having to do with urban gardening.
Yes, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to be emceeing an award ceremony honoring Ken Dunn later this month. Let me get that information. You continue, and then we can talk about that.
And Ken has been involved in this movement for a long, long time. In fact, I ran into Ken on the South Side recently, and I said, Ken, you know, this issue seems to be quite a fashionable topic. I said, is it all right for us to be behind a fashionable topic? And he said, I think in this case, very much so. Joel Smith, who's was involved with the Slow Food Movement, I believe is past president of the Slow Food Movement around here, and Tara Brockman, who is an author and involved in the nonprofit dedicated to preserving farmland and training new farmers and connecting local producers and consumers. So we've got a terrific panel at 10:30 to 12:30 on Sunday morning, January 17th, followed at 2 o'clock, 2 to 4, again, the workshop free and open to the public on how helping people start designed really to help people start gardens in their community. So that'll be the basics on how to start a community garden.
Now, when you talk about the basics of community garden, obviously there's more than just design. Are you going to address at all any of the political and social aspects of doing this, or is this more just design?
This is probably going to be more design.
Uh-huh.
I think whatever political discussions will take place will probably take place with some vigor from 10:30 to 12:30 on Sunday morning, and probably on Friday night, January 15th, probably with Will Allen as well.
And, of course, this is all part of the Martin Luther King Jr. Social Justice Weekend. I think this is a good opportunity to bring in our other guests on the line. In line one, we have Joel Smith. Joel, you with us?
I am, yes.
On line two, Tara Brockman.
Yes.
Hi. They're both on the panel, and I guess the question I would address to either of you and or both of you would be, how is food justice related to social justice? Or not?
Oh, it definitely is. There's a lot of different aspects to it. You can start pretty much anywhere you want, but I might start with the social justice aspect of chemicals and chemical trespass into our bodies that we may not want.
I think it's a great place to start.
The current food system does all it can not to let you know how your food was grown, and even when you start to find out the chemicals, it's really hard to know not only what these chemicals do in our bodies individually, but virtually impossible to know how they all interact together. And I think it should be our right as human beings, not just consumers, to know these things. I mean, there have been movements, to label milk that it has the RBGH, the growth hormone, and that was pretty much knocked down by the large milk-producing companies. And similarly, the whole thing about country of origin had a huge fight. You know, you would think that would be an easy thing to say, we want to know where our food was raised, but that's been a difficult thing, although now we do have the law, although it may not be in practice as much as it should be.
And that doesn't even, begin to address GMOs. I agree with you. It's interesting. Speaking of the South Side, there's a restaurant. I don't even know it's still there because I don't hang out too much on the South Side. The one that had the sign in the window, "See Your Food," is that still there? I don't remember. Years ago, I ate there, and I think now that's what we're looking at. We want to see our food. We want to see how it's grown. What the inputs are. Whether it's chemicals or genetics, and know what we get. And as you mentioned, when the major food producers refuse to label products, all I say is, what have you got to hide?
Exactly.
And if you are hiding things and you won't come clean, why should I buy from you? Except that they control so much of the market, and that's why this movement is so important. And
they have huge advertising budgets, which lead most people to believe there's this pastoral scene out there, with the rooster crowing in the Tyson's commercial as the sun comes up on a beautiful green setting. In fact, all of that is completely false. The way that the chickens are raised by Tyson and others is, it's true. If people knew, they would not buy that food.
And Joel Smith, that's part of the slow, that is in essence the slow food movement, is it not?
Well, I was going to address your initial question, which is how social justice and food justice are essentially equated. It really comes down to one word, which is the problems associated with food access. It's really kind of a tragedy in this country that we eat as badly as we do nationwide. But if you think about the problems that are facing those who are less well off than others in society, the problem is really highlighted. it's unfortunate that people in the inner city, as well as, strangely enough, people in the country, eat as badly as they do. And one of the missions of Slow Food is really to try to get as much, to raise the awareness of people to the availability of good food if they're willing to just go out and seek it out a little bit.
They need to have the access, and right. they need to have the knowledge of what to do with good healthy food, the education. We had a guest in our garden in the South Side who, a fellow in his 20s who is otherwise, I think, quite well informed, and he could not recognize the peppers and eggplants and tomatoes on the vine. And so I suspect that his familiarity with those foods came after they had been seriously processed.
Or canned, so you can see it. If it's got a label, you can read it.
He could not recognize them on the vine.
Well, I'm sure that there's some of those that I couldn't recognize. And I'm supposed to be an expert on this. And it's you do need some experience, and the average American has little to none. Or little to no experience in this regard, and it's that's why this movement is so important. So, Joel and Tara, what sort of goals do you have for the workshop that you'll be doing this Sunday, or next Sunday, actually?
Well, I kind of want it to go in the direction that the audience might be interested in, but I certainly would like to speak. Sort of as in my role as a fourth generation of a Central Illinois farm family, I would like to speak somewhat to the voice of Illinois farmers, young and old. And just a few years ago, I would have said old and older, because if you actually lined up every single farmer in the United States, which would be actually a relatively short line, the line of incarcerated persons is about twice as long as the line of farmers, but you would have put my brother, who's pushing 50, in that line, would have been sort of near the end of that line with very few people younger than him. Now I'm happy to say that, as being part of a farm beginnings course that the Land Connection has been doing the past 5 years, I can actually name now dozens of farmers in their 20s, and I think this is incredibly important that we don't lose our ability to grow our own food in this amazing country with this amazing farmland. So I want to talk about the importance of farmers, the importance of farmland, and the fact that people have a lot of power. Every single person chooses 3 times a day, what kind of food system to support. So we can talk about that a little bit as well.
But, Tara, let me bring up something that is kind of interesting, I think. And it's good that the younger people are beginning to understand that this is important, they should farm. How many of them, however, are going to go back to the farms? That is to say, our ex-urban areas, as opposed to the urban areas where they can farm in their neighborhoods here, that's a growing movement. How successful are we in getting people to stay out in the country and work the farms, the traditional farms out there?
Yeah, that's a very good point, and I do love the urban ag movement, because you can grow an awful lot of food in a very small space. But I am also concerned about the folks out in, the multi-generational farm families, where it seems like the 60 and 70 and 80-year-old farmers out there are the last in the whole, 3 or 4 generations of family farms. But, there's a lot of people out there who have jobs in the city. Some of them took our Farm Beginnings course, a fellow who worked at Motorola up there in the northern suburbs, who came from a Central Illinois farm family, heard about Farm Beginnings, and just had one of those, he said, NPR moments when he heard about it on the radio, and stopped the car and said, I could actually do this. I could take a course and move back to my family farm and grow good food for people. And he actually has done that. Now they're in their first year on their new farm down near Kankakee area.
We call that, on this station, we call it a progressive talk moment.
<I'm> sorry. Yes, exactly. Maybe we'll have one of those.
Yeah, exactly. And there may be people listening here this morning who begin to think that they can have a different kind of life, something that, what can be more satisfying than growing food, not only for yourself, but for other people? Joel, I was going to let you jump in here before I let you guys go.
What I want to try to do on the panel is make people connect the dots between all of the different components of healthy food, healthy eating, healthy family, healthy culture, healthy environment. They're all one part of one big, huge puzzle. And once you begin to separate them into their components and not treat them as part of a bigger gestalt of healthy living, that's when things begin to break down. You know, I always like to say that a healthy food system, a healthy agricultural system, is kind of like a pond in the countryside. And when you throw a rock into the pond, a lot of wonderful things happen. A lot of ripples flow out from where you dip your toe into the pond or throw that rock. And it's what people need to understand what those effects are.
And if you're lucky, the rock will hit a big old Asian carp in the head. listen, Joel Smith, Tara Brockman, thank you so much. They're going to be part of the symposium on food justice and sustainable land use, and that's at KAM Isaiah Israel, 1100 East Hyde Park Boulevard. That will be Sunday, next Sunday, January 17th. That's you've got the morning event. That's what, 10:30, right?
10:30 to 12:30.
The 12:30, and then the afternoon is 2 to 4.
2 to 4.
And the difference between the morning and the afternoon?
The 10:30 to 12:30 symposium on Sunday morning, and again free and open to the public, is a panel symposium to discuss issues of equal access and affordable access to healthy food and sustainable and responsible land use. From 2 to 4 on Sunday afternoon, we'll actually be running a basic workshop on how to start a garden for your community, a food-producing garden for your community.
And you're going to learn a lot. Joel and Tara, thank you so much for stopping by this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Robert Neville, again, let's also remind people that this Friday, the 15th, is when Will Allen will come in. You know, we tried to get him for the show. I guess I'm I'm not an A-lister yet here. I'm going to snare him. I'm going to get him on this show at some point. Tell him to bring his big bag of MacArthur cash with him just so I can take a look at it. It's probably a check.
You know, I will tell you that Ken Dunn introduced me to Will Allen, and he told me that he offered me his cell phone number with the caveat that he's a very hard man to get a hold of, and eventually he'll return your call. I phoned him up on his cell phone, and he immediately answered the phone and was so gracious and so generous with his time, as he is in coming to our synagogue on the 15th, that it was a delight to talk to him. He's a peach of a fellow, and he is passionate about this issue. And
obviously, you don't win a MacArthur Grant by dabbling,
right? And is very interested in helping us here in Chicago continue the work that he's been doing up in Milwaukee.
Well, good luck on this, Robert, and congratulations on putting it together. I mean, I think it's a terrific idea, and we just need to continue to spread the word, and I hope folks will stop by 7 p.m. Friday for the Shabbat service, and then on 10:30 or 2 o'clock a week from today at KAM Isaiah Israel, 1100 East Hyde Park Boulevard in Chicago, and as Robert points out, it's all free.
Mike, I want to thank you for having me on the show this morning and for WCPT to have me on.
Our pleasure. We're happy to do it. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Rick DeMaio weather coming up in just a second. I want to let you know we've got some other stuff going on in the show, too. We dived right into this. I didn't tell you that. Second hour, we're going to look at the historic Osage orange tree in Kewaunee that is saved, well, for now. We're going to talk to Guy Sternberg and some other people about that, and you will find out how they were able to get it to stay for now, and we'll see if it's going to stay in the future. It's a 170-year-old tree with a lot of history behind it. We talked about this on the show a couple of months ago, and I wanted to bring everybody together to wrap that whole story up, well, although it's a continuing story, so we're not going to be able to wrap it up today, but we'll talk to them. And then later in the show, you don't know this, Heather, because I haven't told you, but I'm about to do another play. Well, it's not a play, actually. It's a theatrical piece.
Radio theater piece.
Well, you know, it kind of is. It could work really well on the radio. It's a thing called verbatim verboten, the words you long to hear. And it's a very interesting thing about, well, basically take word conversations that were never meant to be recorded but got recorded and then transcribed, and then get some actors on stage to read the various parts.
Are these with well-known conversations, or are these regular folk conversations?
They're
well-known folk conversations.
They're well-known folk conversations. You know, some of them you know about, like the Christian Bale freak out when he was shooting Terminator.
Yeah.
Because he's such a genius.
Yeah. Well,
oh, that guy's...
you're really pretty. You got to pay for it somewhere else. And
yeah, but anybody, who can talk like this for 2 hours, he's got to be a genius. That guy is a genius. They're word for word transcripts of noted people, and some of them are ordinary folks. A lot of them are famous. They're saying things they never meant the public to hear.
Like Alec Baldwin's rant on the machine to his daughter.
Like
that.
I don't even know if it's in that group.
That's a good one.
That would be a good one. Surveillance tapes, secretly recorded conversations. Nixon's on there
a
number of times.
I was waiting for Nixon, yeah.
Forgotten open mics, on camera, diatribes, released emails, private correspondence, all this stuff. Now, we're going to be doing, well, we'll talk about that, but it starts next Wednesday at Hamburger Mary's up in Andersonville. We're going to be just doing this on Wednesdays. And so later in the program, I'm going to be talking to the creator of it, Michael Martin, and Chicago actor Richard Henzel's coming down, and we're going to do a little piece down here, and maybe more than one, and we'll talk about that. So it has nothing to do with gardening, has nothing to do with the environment.
It's theater season, though. It's cold.
It's cold. And
you go indoors and get some culture
And I got a radio show, and if I'm going to be on stage, I want people to come and see the darn thing. That's the way.
Shameless plugs are perfectly acceptable on live radio.
Shameless plugs, exactly. So that happens later. Rick DeMaio, in just a second. The great pioneering ecologist Aldo Leopold once said, "The outstanding scientific discovery of the 20th century is not television or radio, but rather the complexity of the land organism. Only those who know the most about it can appreciate how little we know about it. The last word in ignorance is the man who says of an animal or plant, what good is it? If the land mechanism as a whole is good, then every part is good, whether we understand it or not. If the biota in the course of eons has built something we like but do not understand, then who but a fool would discard seemingly useless parts? To keep every cog and wheel is the first precaution of intelligent tinkering." Fabulous quote. At WRD Environmental, we not only appreciate the complexity of the region's ecology, but are dedicated to protecting, restoring, and healing it. They create sustainable landscapes from large-scale master planning to community pocket parks. For innovative, sustainable landscape development, choose WRDEnvironmental.com. Again, they're located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology. If you want to find them, they are indeed online at WRDEnvironmental.com. Okay, now we got a little bit of Russian. I don't even know what I did with. Here they are. I was thinking, you know, because of Elvis's birthday the other day, we're going to have to play some Elvis deal later. I think it's going to have to be Eco Elvis.
Oh, of course, it's got to be Eco Elvis. This is his only channel.
But for Rick DeMaio weather, because I know this is the way he feels. If this goes, oh, there we are. Asking the question, why am I getting up so early on a Sunday morning, especially when it's so cold? Meteorologist Rick DeMaio.
That's because I get to talk to you, Mike, and Heather, and listen to all the fun things that you've been doing over the last half hour on the phone. And
fun? We were serious. It was, good serious. I like that. Getting
gardening is important, and growing things is important, and all that stuff. Without a doubt.
And
do you have community shoveling, Mike?
I wish.
Community what?
Community shoveling.
Oh. No. I did my own this week.
That's a good sign of how much a block is, you know, pretty much part of the community is whether or not they shovel.
You know, it is interesting. You know, those of us who are homeowners look out on the block, mm-hmm. and you want to see it go from sea to shining sea, from one end of the block to the other. You want that completely
right.
shoveled because you figure now you got good neighbors.
Right.
And the problem is when you have abandoned buildings on your block. So you know who ends up shoveling them? Me. You know?
It's all right. Someone's got to do it, right?
Yeah, I know. So if it's a heavy snow, it's not a lot of fun. But, you know, it's...
Right, the stuff that we had this past week wasn't bad.
It wasn't as bad as folks thought it was going to be, I take it.
Well, I think there were some forecasts out there that were going way overboard.
I agree, Rick. I told everyone they needed to watch you. Because everyone was acting like it was the end of all, and I was like, it's not going to be that bad.
Well, you know, the problem, Heather, is that I think sometimes the people on TV and...
You're one of them.
Well, no. I don't think I am, because I think I do a pretty good job of telling people, look, you're going to have snow in the morning, you're going to have a big break in the afternoon, then you're going to have snow late tonight. So usually when that happens, you generally tend to get streets cleaned very, very quickly, okay? Lake effect snow oftentimes is very problematic from a standpoint of trying to figure out exactly where it's good. I shouldn't say it's problematic. It's very temperamental. Usually it's not as bad as you think. So in the end, you have to somewhat restrain yourself by just because there's a winter storm warning out and there's a forecast of 6 to 10 inches. If people know you're going to get 3 inches in the morning and you're going to get a break and you could get 3 inches in the night, overall it's not going to be a bad 6 inches. And what happened was we ended up getting the low end of the 6 to 10, and then when you hear something like, oh, the lake effect could produce up to a foot of snow in some locations near the lake, what do people say? They end up saying, I hear we're going to get a foot of snow. And that's the wrong way. And the problem is that you have to sometimes restrain yourself, because public perception is always going to take something and make it worse. So you almost have to have a forecast, not so much for the storm itself, but for the way people react to the storm. And I still don't see people on TV getting it. I just don't. It frustrates the hell out of me. It really does.
You know, you got to teach a course on this, Rick.
When I was in the newsroom, I used to walk around the newsroom going, please, can we exercise some restraint? Okay, let's talk about the good things. Let's talk about the fact that, you know, sure, the morning rush hour was terrible, but it's going to be a lot better, you know, this afternoon. And all I kept hearing about was, oh, if you thought this morning's rush hour was bad, wait till tomorrow when we have, you know, lake effect snow and 25-mile-per-hour winds and blowing and drifting snow. And I'm thinking to myself, when was the last time you walked around the city of Chicago and you went, oh, my God, the snow is blowing and drifting so much I'm having a hard time walking from my house to the train? It doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? You don't get blowing and drifting snow in the city as much as you do in the rural area. Now, it doesn't say that it doesn't happen in the rural areas. It does. But we have to talk about the good things as much as we talk about the possible bad things. And I still don't see the people in the news media getting that, and it's really frustrating. So
let's admit it. The people in the news media are basically nimrods.
No, they're not.
That's what we do. We say something controversial.
They're pessimistic.
And generalize. That's the whole idea, right?
And what happens is once the ball is rolling down the hill, even though it may not be going in the direction that you thought it would be,
it's
very difficult for them to say, okay, let's go out there, because I saw a couple of reporters go out and do live shots Thursday night. Instead of them saying, you know what, even though this morning was bad and this afternoon wasn't that bad, maybe we caught a break, maybe it wasn't blah, 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 or maybe we're going to get the low end of the range. It's okay to get the low end of a 6 to 10-inch forecast. We got about 6 inches. But when you say 6 to 10, possible 12 inches, everybody takes a 6 to 10 and makes it a 12. And it drives me crazy.
Hey, you know what? This is what I love about you, Rick. people who listen to this radio show, they get the inside scoop. Not only do they get the weather forecast, they get what the meteorologists are thinking about the way weather is reported. And that's what I love about having you on the show.
Well, thanks. And trust me, there's a lot of meteorologists who think the same way I do. They really are. But at the same time, you know, you have to have guts get up there and say, look, this is not going to be that bad. And oftentimes I find a lot of people on TV are afraid to do that because they're more afraid about being wrong than about being right. That's pretty much what it comes down to.
Well, but you guys are always wrong anyway, so it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, that's the thing, right? Regardless of what happens, you're going to get actually, I was thinking about this the other day, Rick, about how the meteorologist's job versus the other reporter's job on television and radio. Okay, their job is to say, here's what happened. And we will tell you what happened here, and we have our fact sheet. Or if they're going to say, here's what's coming up, they've got a press release that says this meeting will happen tomorrow. The meteorologist, on the other hand, has to predict something. Mm-hmm. This is what we think will happen. We really don't know for sure. And then you get all the grief for it, while the other reporters, they'll get lots of stuff wrong. But it already happened, and they still get it wrong.
Yeah, it used to be a time when you would hear sports guys on TV or sports women on TV predict scores. That doesn't happen anymore. That doesn't happen.
Well, unless they're bookies.
Well, unless they're bookies, but I mean, only on probably some of your radio stations do you hear that. But that's also rare as well. So I knew going into this event. And I forecast for a very large snow removal company in Elgin. They handle, 1,800 sites. And I emailed the guy who runs the operation two or three times. This was last Monday. I said, I want you to exercise a lot of patience with this upcoming storm because it's going to come through in three different parts. And the fourth part is going to be the most difficult to forecast. And I kept saying that, So I was basically preparing him for how to handle the information even before I gave it to him. Because the last thing I wanted him to say was, oh, so we're going to get this. I'm like, no, I don't want you to think that way. You're going to get this in the morning, you're going to get a big break in the afternoon, and you're going to get this late, and then it's going to be something that you cannot predict more than 12 hours out, depending on how this lake effect band sets up. And then even the day before, I was listening to WGN Radio, and I heard John Williams kind of asking Jim Ramsey, who was filling in for Tom Skilling, because Skilling was off, and Williams was grilling him. He kept grilling him on, oh, yeah, but you said this, and then we're going to get lake effect, but that only happens around the rim of the lake, so really, we're essentially done, right? And I heard Ramsey saying, well, there's still the potential. I'm like, Jim, just put him in his place. Tell him that this stuff is going to be 40 miles inland. That's how lake effect snow happens. In the end, most everybody is going to get a certain amount of snow. It's going to be on the low end, but that's okay. And I felt like I was like on the other end of the. I was listening to the radio, cringing, wanting Jim Ramsey to really stick up for himself. And I thought he did a pretty good job, but at the same time, I felt like some of the questions that were coming towards him were a bit unfair. I'm like, come on. And what happens is your listeners end up siding with the person who's asking the question. They go, see, I told you. And
this is too funny.
I love it.
I get this vision of John Williams going,
yeah.
Oh, no, take that, Ramsey.
Oh, yeah.
We'll beat it out of you if they have to. Give us the truth.
I had spoken to him a couple of times.
You can't handle the truth.
It was his job to be the needler, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so
you want to know about the weather today, huh?
Nah. Okay, here we go. DeMaio, give me the weather. Tell me it's going to be awful. Come on.
Oh, it's beautiful. I'm looking out over Lake Michigan. There's all these little layers of pancake ice moving around. And, Mike, if you get a chance, you have to get down to the lakefront north of Foster Avenue. Well, I should say north of Hollywood. There's the most amazing ice formation. And I know you love to get out and grab the moment. And both today and tomorrow, probably more so tomorrow because she'll probably have more time in the morning with the sun, but I've never seen ice formations like this. It's absolutely beautiful. And it looks like something from the North Pole or somewhere in the Arctic Ocean because the way the wind has been blowing the water up along the shoreline, you have the ice formations now covered with this layer of glaze. and with the sun shining off of it, and then that winter blue sky and the white snow, it's very picturesque. So without a doubt, anybody who's listening and wants to go down to the lakefront to take some pictures, today is the day to do it. I know, Mike, you'd like that as well.
Yeah, and I think about you up there having a hot toddy there looking out on the lake. Oh, it's a really nice, you like this view, Mike. Come out and stand on the lakefront and take a picture of it. And you said you know how I like to seize the day, the carpe diem, but it's Asian carpe diem is all
right.
I believe
right.
it.
Gonna seize all the Asian carpe diem.
Yes,
right.
So what?
Out there right now.
I know, and you wrote to me this morning that the good news is it's going to get a little worse before it gets better today, a bit then before it warms up later in the week.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's zero out of here, zero at Midway. It's -6 at Joliet, -5 at DuPage County Airport, -9 in Aurora, -8 at Rockford, -11 at Kankakee. You're saying to myself, oh, my God, that's freaking cold. Well, the reason why it's so cold is we have this large area of high pressure with basically no wind over us. So with clear skies, light winds, and a deep snowpack, it's very easy for the lower, say, 200 feet of the atmosphere to get this cold. However, the wind should begin to pick up this afternoon, and that'll eventually erode some of this cold air. So we'll jump very quickly from zero this morning to about 20, quickly by about 2 or 3 o'clock this afternoon. The problem is that the wind is going to increase to about 15 miles per hour. So the wind chill will actually be worse later on this afternoon compared to what it is now. Even though the wind is blowing at about 3 to 4 miles per hour, and you may hear wind chill factor of -15, it's not that bad -15. It's kind of like a light -15 where you can go outside, bundled up, and you're fine. But trust me, later on this afternoon, it may actually feel more harsh as that wind begins to blow. But after that, I think we're fine. 20 today, maybe a few clouds and some light flurries tomorrow, high of about 25. And then by Tuesday, Wednesday, and even into Thursday, we could be looking at a lot of slush around here because temperatures, no doubt, under sunshine and southwest winds will probably get up to about 30 to 35 degrees. So nothing in the way of any extreme cold once we get past today, and nothing in the way of any big storms, Mike, for about another, I'd say about 7 to 10 days as we get into what's called a split flow pattern. So we get into a bona fide January thaw, which is nice, finally.
And is it going to stay that way? Is there any way of knowing whether this is a pattern that's going to continue for a while?
Well, it's kind of interesting because I was looking at some of the indexes for El Nino, and even though it's been extremely cold across portions of the southeast, temperatures again in Florida this morning are ridiculous. They're in the low to mid-30s with winds out of the north of like 20 miles per hour. My parents are in Lake County, north of Orlando. Actually had a little bit of wet snow yesterday. My father's like, what happened to this global warming crap you keep telling me about? Like, Dad, this is short-term stuff. Don't worry about it. It'll go away.
You know, that's something I read about, how a lot of these, you know, all the naysayers are out there right now. Oh, it's so cold. There's no global warming. And, yeah.
You know what, Mike? But they have the right to, because I think the way sometimes, and I've talked to you about this before, sometimes the way that global warming and climate change has been promoted, I think it's been overdone where people say, okay, it's going to happen. It's going to happen all the time. And what I teach in my class is that you have to look at it on a regional level. You have to look on it on a seasonal level. You're still going to have weather, but you have to look at the overall climate. So, again, it's another way of sometimes, you know, delivering the information, and not the correct way. The bottom line, though, is that I would not be surprised to see your orange juice on the counter next week probably a little bit more expensive due to the fact that I think probably the northern section of the Florida citrus belt is probably gonna experience a significant freeze tonight if they haven't already this morning. But this is record cold for them. But the good news is that even though we're still under an El Nino, the pattern is such that what's called the North Atlantic Oscillation, that's the stuff that goes from the North Atlantic into Greenland and back to eastern Canada, that has actually been stronger than El Nino. So in places like the northern plains, the Great Lakes, and the southeast, been cold, but still there's a storm system that's going to come through the southern plains by early this week. I should say, well, most like Wednesday or Thursday, which is very reminiscent of El Nino, very strong system, very wet, probably severe weather in the southeast. And then it looks like we may get into a typical El Nino for the second half of January, and who knows? That may be the case for the rest of the winter, and this could be the coldest time of the year, which it usually is. And all of a sudden we're getting into April, we go, hey, you know what? Even though it was cold in December and early January, the winter kind of turned out to be above normal. So there's still a chance that that can happen, but Over the next 10 days is what I think the farthest out I can look right now. Definitely nothing in the way of any big storm that looks like the cold weather definitely eases, Mark.
That's Rick DeMaio. He's here every Sunday at 8:30 or thereabouts. And you can find his forecasts at DeMaioWeather.com. Also go to MikeNovak.net, M-I-K-E-N-O-W-A-K. .net, and on the homepage you can click on to his weather website. Rick, great talking to you. We'll talk next week.
Okay, Mike, talk to you later, and have a good day as well.
You too, Rick.
Bye-bye. The Christmas tree has long been a pile of mulch, and the New Year's confetti has been recycled, so it's time to take a look around the house and give some TLC to those neglected indoor plants. SIDS Greenhouses can help. With the right soil mixes and fertilizers, SIDS has one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery, and of course, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants. Houseplants not only look great, but they also help improve indoor air quality. But remember that most homes are very dry in winter, and plants need extra humidity. Group tropicals together or place them on a shallow tray filled with pebbles and water. Don't put them in the water. You want the pebbles sticking out above the water so that the pot can sit on that, and then the water
evaporates.
Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. What's that word again?
Evaporates.
Thank you. Around the plant, but
treats
that
the moisture it needs.
I was going to say, but don't overwater. There's a difference between humidity and watering, because overwatering is a leading killer of indoor plants, especially in the winter. So take it easy on the water. Did you know that you can still trade in your poinsettia plant at SIDS and get 25% off a shiny new tropical plant? That's until February 1st. Oh, and all remaining Christmas merchandise is 60 to 75% off while supplies last. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard. Now, we were just talking to Rick DeMaio about the Weta and how cold it's been, and, you know, walking out the door and seeing your breath and wind chills of minus 15 and you breathe out and it freezes solid, and it's like walking into plate glass, and there's a phrase for that. It's called welcome to winter in Chicago, although it does change. And I know that the first thing that comes into your head is, I can't wait to get my garden planted this year. Well, maybe that's not the first thing. But if that is one of your thoughts, then you're hopelessly addicted to gardening. And if that's the case, why don't you have a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine? This is the garden magazine for our region, which means this part of the Midwest. You'll learn everything you need to know about gardening in Zone 5, which is right around Chicago. But you'll learn about some of the other zones, too. Zone 4 is not too far away. There's some Zone 6s not too far away. You can find Chicagoland Gardening Magazine in your local store or garden center. More than 800 new newsstand locations have been added in the last couple of months. But why trudge out to the store when you can have it delivered to your home? There's even a guy named Mike who writes a column in the back of the magazine, and they pay him for making up stuff. At least this week. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com and give the office a call. I would say, you know what, your best bet, go to ChicagolandGardening.com and get yourself one of them mags.
DR Services Unlimited has been providing Chicago's North Shore with award-winning remodeling and design-build services since 1991, giving their clients top-quality service and real value. They're on the cutting edge of green building technology, helping clients make their home more energy efficient without sacrificing beauty or function. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, simply want to add a room or renovate, call DR Services at 847-998-1687 or visit them at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Absolutely. We'll do that. I have no idea where I am here. I'm looking for... Here's my cheat sheet. Oh, yeah, it's time for a tip from the care of trees. When removing snow, and even though it doesn't look like we're going to have any for a little bit, but you never know, try to gently brush it off. Don't shake the branches, as this may cause them to break. This is especially true for evergreens, which can collect excessive amounts of snow. If the snow is frozen on the branch and will not brush off easily, it's best to let it melt naturally to avoid damage to the tree or shrub. If you know that snow is coming and you think that a plant might have trouble, relatively small trees can be wrapped together or the leaders tied with strips of carpet, strong cloth, or nylon stockings, two-thirds of the way above the weak crotches. Can't believe I just said nylon stockings and weak crotches in the same sentence. Yeah. You heard me say that, yeah.
Like, my face is turning purple because I'm so mature.
That's right. You're 14. All right. But don't forget to remove those ties in the spring, and don't forget to make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look. Go to thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people, and their love for
trees.
Nylons. And trees. They love, but nylons
are an arborist's friend from, I've learned this on this show.
I know, they are. There's just so much you can do, and they don't cut into the bark, which is a good thing, you know. So Mike Novak Show, we're coming up on CNN News. In the second hour, we're going to be talking about these Osage orange that we hope has been rescued in Kewaunee. We're going to talk about Verboten, which is a theater piece that I'm going to be appearing in starting next Wednesday up on the north side. So, and again, has nothing to do with horticulture. So we'll get the horticulture out of the way first and do the showbiz after that. And then Mighty House is at 10 o'clock. So stick around for the second big hour of the Mike Novak Show. You can always go to www.mikenovak.net to get all the information you need.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by SIDS Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes since 1997. Podcasts of this program, along with green tips, valuable links, and DeMaio weather, are a click away at MikeNovak.net. That's MikeNovak.net. Here he is, Mike Novak.
And it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed.
Our house, and I shovel everybody else's walk. Our house. Hey, welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. This hour, it's trees and showbiz. Not necessarily, yes, in that order, actually. Definitely in that order. Anytime you want to call in, you're always welcome to jump into a conversation, or ask a question, 773-838-9278, 773-838-WCPT, and of course you can always write to me, mike@mikenovak.net, that's the easiest way for you to reach me, mike@mikenovak.net. My staff, which is me, and I, which is me, will be happy to work as hard as we can to get a question answered. Don't always get everything done, but we do our darndest. That is to say, me and my staff. Is that Guy on line two? Oh, get Guy. Guy's. What, we got a problem?
They just were having problems getting their phones in order, so they're going to call me back. I've got Bruce.
Oh, okay.
But they're both, Guy and David are going to call us in moments.
Okay, in absolute moments.
Moments.
Good. Because I really wanted to start with Guy, because he's sort of the prime mover on this, so I'm hoping he will call right back so we can get him. But, you know, as long as I've got him on the phone.
We got the mayor.
Yeah, the mayor. Bruce Tossel. from Kewaunee, Illinois. How you doing, Bruce?
Pretty good, Mike. Thank you for having me on today.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you on. I'm so glad that you played a part in this this story. There's a guy calling now, or one of them. One of them's calling here. Those of you who are not familiar with this, a couple of months back, I got an email, and I can't remember exactly who it was from, but I know that that guy jumped on it right away, and it was about an Osage orange tree that grows in your town, and it's kind of on a major thoroughfare, isn't it, Bruce?
Right, it's on the main highway, the main street through Kewaunee, and if anyone's ever down here, it's real easy to find. It's just down from the Goods Furniture Store, about two blocks.
I didn't realize that.
Right.
See, and that's what keeps you guys on the map. Not necessarily on this station, but on Gargantua Radio down the dial. They're always advertising Goods.
Yep.
In Kewaunee, and I didn't realize that the Osage Orange was so close to that store.
Right, it's a small town.
About how much in population?
13,000.
Okay. And Guy Sternberg is now with us as well. How are you doing, Guy?
Hello, Mike. How are you? A little cool.
It is a little bit. It's going to get better.
Yeah.
It always will.
Well, I'm ready for it. We've had our week or two of winter now. That's good enough.
Yeah, you want a week or two and then just move on, right?
Yeah, definitely move on.
Line two, David Ellis. David, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
David is with the American Horticultural Society. Guy Sternberg is an arborist from down in Menard County in Illinois with Star Hill Forest Arboretum. In fact, he started Star Hill Forest Arboretum. And Bruce Tossel is the mayor of Kewaunee, Illinois. So let's go back to the beginning, Guy, on how all of this began. I got an email and responded to you kind of quickly on it because you immediately sent out the word. You got notice that there was that this Osage Orange in Kewaunee was in possible danger of being removed.
I was just sitting there one Saturday morning minding my own business, and a friend of mine called, emailed me a link to the Kewaunee newspaper and said, you know, the old hedge tree has got to come down. It's falling. I said, what? Because I'd been taking tour groups there for probably 25 years. Every time we do big tree tours with, you know, European travel, tree travel groups and so forth, that's one of our stops. And I knew it had been leaning for a long time, and probably we should have gotten with the city years ago and done something, but you know how it goes. And then the city noticed that it was starting to lean a little bit more because the sidewalk was starting to heave, which obviously you can't have a tree leaning over a state highway that's kind of falling on the highway, especially one this huge. So I couldn't reach the city, obviously, because it was a weekend, and that Tuesday was supposed to come down. So I emailed a bunch of people that I knew who were tree people, many of whom had been through this type of thing before. I just said, let's approach the city and see if we can get a stay of execution so we can study any possible alternatives to this. And a number of them did contact the city, and some others I think did too, because I wasn't the only one that sent the link. So when I managed to get a hold of Mayor Tossel that next week city manager Kip Spear as well, and even in the news article, they had expressed a lot of remorse that the tree had to come down, but they didn't see an alternative. So we suggested that, you know, maybe there would be an alternative, and they already had a permit and everything to set up and do the removal, so they bought into the idea of just removing some of the heavily weighted cantilevered limbs that were over the highway at that point, and then giving the tree a few more weeks to you know, see what we could come up with. And it all came out of that. It's not too often that you find a city management so eager to try to do the right thing as Kewaunee has been, and I think they were probably quite relieved to find that there were a number of people who would volunteer their time and the money and expertise to try to save this thing.
Yeah, I think that's the great lesson to be learned from this story is that reasonable people can be reasonable. Mayor Tossel, tell me what was going through your mind when you started getting emails from people saying that we needed to look at other ways to save this tree. How had you come to the conclusion that it needed to be removed?
Well, we had been monitoring it for probably a year at least, you know, the raising the sidewalk, and being a pretty wet year, probably contributed, you know, with the lean allowing it to move more. When the weight-bearing side, the roots started to heave up, we thought probably one of them broke, and the side closest to the road, those roots we figured didn't have any support. If anything, the tree was folding over on them. Being right on the highway and close to a stoplight made it extra dangerous for, you know, anyone passing through the town. So, you know, the fear of someone getting injured kind of outweighed the necessity of having the tree.
Yeah, you didn't want somebody coming into goods, furniture, and then getting whacked by an Osage orange.
No, we wouldn't want that reputation. We wanted to keep the visitors coming back.
But then you must have gotten quite a few emails, or at least emails from people who were making a pretty good argument for saving the tree.
Yeah, it was amazing. I don't think I ever got so many emails as on this one subject, and they came in as far away as England, which was pretty amazing. But all over the country, and they were, you know, some pretty reputable people. So, you know, when we started getting them, we decided to investigate a little further, and one of them was a district forester from the DNR. And I contacted him, and I asked, "Is Guy Sternberg, did he used to work for DNR?" And he told me, "Yeah, he did." So I called Guy and talked to him a little bit, and, you know, we knew a little history on the tree as far as it was here before the city even existed, and, you know, that kind of made it a kind of a special tree anyway. But then Guy brought in some history as far as how the tree got there, and...
Well, why don't and while we're on that, Guy, why don't you give us a little bit of that history? Because it really does have a remarkable part in Illinois history.
Well, it does, actually, in American history. Professor Jonathan Turner from Illinois College, which is the oldest college in the state, back in the late 1830s, early 1840s, we were changing from an open-range economy to a farm economy and looking for ways to fence in livestock and so forth. And obviously on the Great Plains, more than right here in Illinois, it's a big concern because you don't really have much wood material to choose from. You know, you try to build a fence out of cottonwood and it rots before the fence is even built. And he's saying, well, what are the alternatives? Well, he thought back to his origins in Europe where they used hedging material, basically European hawthorns for the most part, and they would plant them and they would shear them off, and of course it makes a thorny impenetrable hedge, and that's how they kept in livestock and had for centuries. So he was looking around and thought, well, Osage orange would be the ideal candidate, and he nearly single-handedly promoted its use, and he was only responsible for planting all these hedgerows that you see throughout the Great Plains, and there are literally probably millions of miles of Osage orange hedgerows. And that was in the 1840s, and this was documented to have been on the Potter farm, which predated Kewanee and was one of those original trees. So right here in Turner's home state, we had a surviving example of one of these original trees. So it's, and that's the context that I presented this to the tour group today. In fact, that England email was probably from somebody that I had taken on one of these tours at one point or another. And, you know, that you do have the Illinois history there. You've got agriculture history. You've got city history. The County Historical Society had gotten on board years ago and researched the farm and posted a little sign at the base of the tree talking about it. So, you know, there are bigger Osage oranges around. There aren't too many older Osage oranges around, although I tell people I've never seen one die of old age. They are just so tough and resilient. But this is one of the first ones planted in the state, and it's, you know, it's still there. It's leaning, but leans can be dealt with if a tree is worth the effort.
You were talking... what I'm wondering is, are there other evidence of... Are there other hedgerows or remnants of hedgerows still in Illinois?
Amazingly, there are many. So many have been bulldozed out for an extra row or two of crops. But a lot of them were planted during the Dust Bowl era. A lot of them are much later in origin, and a lot of them just don't have the documented history that this one does.
So that's the difference.
The very first ones. Mm-hmm. It is over 15 feet in circumference, so it's large. But we have a few bigger in Illinois, but I don't think they're as old. And, in fact, when you talk to David Ellis, he's got a huge one. It was one of the very first ones ever planted when Lewis and Clark introduced them into cultivation. He can tell you about that as well.
Well, you're doing my segues here for me, Guy.
I'm trying.
No, you're good. I was going to go next to David Ellis, and you do know something about Osage Orange, and you say you have one, what is it, on your property or where you work or what?
Yes, it's at our headquarters in Alexandria, Virginia.
And that's the American Horticultural Society.
Yes, the American Horticultural Society's headquarters. It's, you know, a dramatically large and statuesque tree, which is currently pending being the national champion, Osage Orange. We're still waiting for final measurements on it.
All right, so you may have the champion, but what is it about Osage Orange that is so remarkable?
Well, I think Guy, you know, covered a lot of it with his, and it's, you know, wrapped up in American lore and history, you know, dating back to Native Americans who, of course, found it an important tree for bows, and there were also some herbal and medicinal uses from the tree. But, of course, the American settlers came and found it to be such a strong tree for their uses as well. It was, in addition to hedgerows, it was used for railroad ties, an important component, because the wood is just so hard. So it's really had a strong cultural and been a strong cultural part of the American history. Lewis and Clark, of course, sent cuttings from the tree when they found it to Thomas Jefferson, and that was, you know, Thomas Jefferson being the gentleman farmer, was always interested in new plants, and so many of the trees began to show up on the East Coast at that point.
So here we have this tree that's part of this historic hedgerow, and Guy, you say there's a connection to Lincoln here someplace.
Well, there is, in the sense that Lincoln's only college learning, if you will, came secondhand via David Rutledge, who was a student at Illinois College, and he was over there. I'm sure he probably knew Turner. Turner planted a tree or several trees probably on campus at that time as well when he was studying that, so Lincoln would have seen them. But in terms of Lincoln's direct connection, hedgerows were not yet established when Lincoln was at New Salem and were just beginning to be established when he left for Washington. But there, yeah, he would have been in the early stages of the hedgerow movement, if you will. The nice thing, too, about Osage Orange is that it's virtually indestructible. It has tetrahydroxystilbene, which is a fancy name for a severely toxic fungicide in the heartwood. So these trees virtually never rot. There are very few insects that can bother them. They're wind firm. The wood is cross-grained and very resilient and tough. It's the heaviest wood, I believe, in North America. Extremely strong. It's very tough to kill. People who have tried to remove them can probably testify. It sprouts freely when it's been cut back. And all these work to our advantage because we knew if we had to cut this tree back, it could be resprouted and regrown into a smaller version of itself. So we can still preserve the historic trunk and the historic legacy of this tree, no matter what we do with it.
We're talking to, that was Guy Sternberg there, the man with the deepest voice in horticulture. And he's an arborist from downstate Illinois, Mayor Bruce Tossel from Kewaunee, and David Ellis from the American Horticultural Society. We're talking about an Osage Orange tree in Kewaunee, and it's right on a thoroughfare, and it was leaning, and it looked like it might have to be removed, and it's been saved to this point. Mayor Tossel, what are your continuing concerns about it?
Well, you know, the tree's still leaning, and we haven't got the support up yet. We're working with Verizon, their properties right behind this tree, to try to get a permission to put a support beam back there to cable the tree off. Raising money, we're still working on that effort. I think so far we have $660 so far that people from around the country have contributed to saving this tree. We're putting a link on Facebook. The tree has its own Facebook page, Save the Osage Orange Tree in Kewaunee, and we're getting a PayPal account set up for that so people can contribute. The wood that was cut off, it has been saved, and we're going to work with different people to make different things out of them, maybe gavels and blocks and paperweights and plaques, clocks, ink pens even, so we're going to try to use as much of the wood as possible to save it. One thing, by being a municipality, you know, we have our own little seal, so we're planning on making certificates of authenticity to go with these objects, and also besides the certificate, a little paper giving the history of the little piece of wood that they'll receive. That'll be a year from now, though. The wood has to dry, you know, for a year, and the need to support it is now. So that's why we're hoping people can send some money to help preserve the tree.
Yeah, let me just address a couple of things here. First of all, I've got pictures on my site, mikenovak.net, on the homepage about the pruning process. Kathleen put together a little slideshow, and you can see, because a number of people have taken photos, and you get a chance to see how it's kind of jammed in between the sidewalk. You see the sidewalk lifting, you see the street next to it, you see the lean on it. You also see the girth of the tree, which is pretty remarkable, and how it was pruned. Now, you know, I've pruned things in my life. I'm not an arborist. And you look at it and you go, ouch. But Guy, and maybe David, I don't know which one you want to address this, they're, as you pointed out, they're pretty resilient, and they tend to grow back.
Well, yeah, I'll start out and David can chime in, I guess. Several things. First of all, Osa Georgia maintains latent or dormant buds, you know, throughout its life. So anytime you cut one, even off at the ground, those buds will break and form new growth. So you can prune these trees relatively obliviously to the standard rules of cutting back to a fork and so on. The other thing is that because it is virtually decay immune, you can do pruning cuts that you wouldn't really attempt on any other tree in this area, knowing that you're not going to induce decay by doing so. So basically you can go at this tree strictly from a mechanical and engineering point of view, try to balance it up. You can remove more than the normal 25% or less proportion of buds off the tree, and the tree will just regrow and bounce back. I've seen, well, we have one tree near University of Illinois in Bonneville that has been pruned back to clear power lines since 1930, when they first installed the real electric lines. The farmer there decided he didn't want to take the tree down. He just wanted to take off the top and leave it there. And he and his sons and his grandson and his great-grandsons, ever since then, once a year they go up there and basically cut the tree back. And it's this beautiful little round-headed Osage orange that, of course, when you cut it back like that, you slow the growth, so the trunk isn't nearly as big as you'd expect. But they're, you know, they just do all sorts of things with Osage orange. And I do have to add, too, that you will find these trees that have leaned over. They will just slowly sort of go down on the side and just keep growing. This is the normal growth process, and that's what this tree is wanting to do. If it was in a city park, you could just let it do it, but not when it's crossing a state highway, obviously.
Well, you know,
that's where we have to step in.
Yeah. David, did you want to add anything to that?
No, certainly Guy knows the arboricultural side of it. From just our personal perspective, our tree, which is incredibly large, has been fortunately under the care of a fine tree care company, The Care of Trees, which I think is headquartered in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, they're a fine sponsor of this very radio program.
Oh, well, I didn't know that. But they are the take care of the trees on our property, and they've been working on this tree now for close to 10 years, and it's cabled a little bit. It does have some branches that are running nearly horizontal, including one leaning on a wall, but it's holding in well, and they think it's in great shape, partly because of the durability of the wood.
Well, at this point, there has been some pruning done, you're going to attempt to do some cabling or staking, or what exactly, Guy?
Well, the city, by my estimate, they took out about 2 tons of wood, which was on the side overleaning the highway, so they relieved a lot of the, you know, the drastic stress on the tree, which is not the long-term solution, but it just buys it some time for the tree. It obviously is springing back a little bit.
And Mayor Tossa, from what I understand, you might actually try to remove a parking lane next to the tree?
Yeah, to let some root growth on that side take hold. That was something that Guy and some of the other arborists thought would be good. I think it'll be kind of up to the state of Illinois, too, but when it comes to paving that part, they put that on the city's back, so we feel that, you know, we have some say-so into whether that's there or not. It wouldn't be any different than any other curb extensions where we have planted, you know, different plants in town, so we think we'll be successful.
What about where the sidewalk is lifting up there, and you can see it on the photos on my website. Is there anything you can do there? Because I understand you have right-of-way problems with a business that's across the sidewalk.
Right. Well, that's the Verizon telephone company there. We're still working with them to get that right-of-ways where we can. The sidewalk's actually ours, but we're kind of working with them too. But I think Guy is going to have someone come up that kind of specializes in the root part of the tree and give us some advice on that. The sidewalk will probably be raised, which will have to comply with the American Disabilities Act. So, you know, it'll be more than just that chunk of the sidewalk. It'll have to go back a little ways to be compliant. And, you know, hopefully that'll be good for the tree, too.
Well, you know, what I would say to folks who are listening, and it might be out Kewaunee way, call or write to Verizon and be nice, be very polite and say, hey, we'd love to have you get involved in helping, excuse me, to save this tree and show your support and let them know it's a historic growth and that we want to save it. You know, if it's me, if I'm mayor, I just remove the highway.
Yeah.
But that's me. That's why I'm not mayor.
Yeah.
I'm just a radio guy. But I do want to point out that I do have the information on my website about the fund. As a matter of fact, Luke Miller, who blogs for Better Homes and Gardens, has written about this. I mean, Guy sent out emails to so many people. And I followed this for weeks. All these emails going back and forth and back and forth. There are dozens and dozens of emails about this and people talking, and you guys actually went out and had a meeting around the tree and looked at it and had people there and city officers and the mayor was there and arborists. And then finally this fundraising effort was developed, and it's called the Osage Orange Tree Fund. People's National Bank of Kewaunee, 207 North Tremont Street, Kewaunee, Illinois, 61443. You don't actually have to remember that. You can go to my website, and the address is there on this week's show. And the link to Luke Miller's blog about the fundraising effort is there. And he's been writing about this on the Better Homes and Gardens blog. And I guess at this point, there's still work to be done, but it looks pretty good, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, I think it's looking good for the tree. You know, actually the work's just begun. You know, we still haven't done anything to help the tree other than prune it back and give it a reprieve, you know. But, you know, Guy's getting some information from a engineer down there on exactly what needs to be done so we have the proper support.
Well, my congratulations to all involved and the hard work that you've all done to keep this tree alive and keep it in place. Mayor, especially congratulations to you and the City Council, who, as I said earlier, were so reasonable about listening to the folks who cared so much about this tree and were willing to bend over backwards to see that it would stay alive. So congratulations to you, a job well done, and I hope that the work progresses. I do want to mention what you mentioned before, Mayor. The Save the Osage Tree in Kewaunee is a Facebook page.
Right, Ken Allen from down in Alabama kind of set that up for us, and then we've been working with PayPal to try to get that donate link on there. They have to make sure we're not for profit and everything. So emails have been going back and forth, and I think we're pretty close on that.
And people should.
And Mike, if I can add something to that too, this fund is dedicated for the tree. This is not going to go into the city coffers to be spent for parties or whatever. You know, the way Mayor Tussle set this up, it has to be two people signing for any expenditure, and it has to be for the tree. And there will be We're going to be propagating the tree. We'll be doing some follow-up pruning. Hopefully a nice interpretive sign can be placed, you know, just down the road a little bit. Obviously, there's sidewalk work to be done. There may be street work to be done. So all this money is going to go back into the tree. Some of it may be saved until next year when we have to do some follow-up work. But
yeah,
it's all a dedicated fund.
And that's important for people to know. So if you want that information, I'm going to post the Save the Osage Tree in Kewaunee blog, or rather Facebook site, also on my on my website, so that people have that as well. Bruce Tossel, David Ellis, Guy Sternberg, thank you so much. Fascinating story. I'm glad, you know, if there's a follow-up, I'm sure Guy will let me know. He doesn't hesitate to get on the computer and send me something. But all of you, thank you so much for being on the program, and we'll talk in the future.
Thank you, Mike.
Wow. Isn't that cool?
That's very cool. That's I love that when you can link past and present like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and really cool. And you know, usually what happens is these things get bulldozed or whatever, and then you go, oh, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have cut that down.
Yeah.
But the city of Kewaunee really stepped up and made sure that they were willing to look at what could be done with this. So great stuff. It's a Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's get some guests in here and get them on the phone, and I'll take care of some business. And among the business is, well, now that the Christmas holiday is just another bad memory, and you gave up on your New Year's resolution about 8 days ago, it's probably time to take a look around the house and tend to some of those indoor gardening tasks you've neglected. For instance, repotting the house plants that you've ignored since you were partying like it was 1999. Sid's greenhouses can help with the right soil mixes and fertilizers. Don't forget, though, that winter is not the best time to fertilize a plant. However, as the days start to get longer and the plants can utilize the sun's energy, they will welcome those nutrients. Think April. You know, beginning of April, something like that. SIDS has one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery, and of course, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants. Remember, houseplants not only look great, they also help improve indoor air quality. And now, through February 1st, you can trade in your poinsettia plant at SIDS and get 25% off a shiny new tropical plant. Oh, and just in case you haven't had your fill of Christmas decorating, all remaining Christmas merchandise is 60 to 75% off while supplies last. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Attention teachers! Want your class to really engage in American history? OneHistory.org has presentations that make history come alive. A 10-year-old Civil War powder monkey. A Depression-era 7-year-old pushing a horse plow. A group of teenage girls facing off against Southern bigots in the Civil Rights Movement. We know how to reach your students. Whether it's for a history class or providing a context for American literature, our presentations get to the heart of history. OneHistory.org. The truth is in the details. Check out our website, www.onehistory.org. That's www.onehistory.org. Or call us at 216-956-6300. 216-956-6300.
From old Greenie, come on and do the Earth Day rock with me. Well, let's rock, everybody, let's rock. Uh-huh. Everybody's got to do more than talk. Let's start dancing to the Earth Day rock. Well, you thought just recycling would be enough.
There it is, our tribute to Eco Elvis, since the King's birthday was
would have been 75.
Yeah, I'll bet that would not have been a pretty sight.
Lord knows. Lord knows.
You know, have another peanut butter and
banana sandwich.
Yeah.
Banana, yeah.
I think some, of course, I can remember, I was in, you know, my in school, and I think it was in college, and I can remember in the 70s just looking at Elvis and thinking, that guy doesn't look good. He doesn't look good.
The jumpsuit Elvis was not my favorite.
No, especially, you know, like around 75, 76. Yeah. Every time you'd see the guy, you'd go, ooh.
Jailhouse Rock Elvis
ooh.
Was my kind of Elvis.
Yeah.
But he died in 77, yes?
Yeah, he did.
He died before I was born.
And I was working in radio at the time, and I was it was a Saturday, as I recall. And this was in the days when, and I was in the news department, and this is in the days when they had the big, these big teletype machines.
Oh, yeah.
Making this huge, I mean, they were the size of refrigerators.
Yeah, I remember those. I remember the noise.
Yeah. Not a computer. It was just a teletype machine, and ding, ding, ding. It was a five bell. It was a five alarmer. I went, uh-oh, something's happened.
Something big just happened.
The king has died. And I saved a clipping of that for a long time. It's in a, it's somewhere. I have that five alarm thing on Elvis.
Oh, that's so neat.
From 1977. Happy birthday, King!
We still love you.
Well, some of us more than others.
Some people are crazy.
I know they are. They still are.
Like, I'm a Beatle person, though, so
I know, and you're insane about the Beatles.
Yeah, so I have the newspapers from the day John Lennon died, but I have nothing on Elvis.
Oh, really?
I have the Tribune and the Sun Times, both issues, and I have them shrink wrapped in plastic.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, see. That to me was said much more about what was going on in our world than and oddly enough, only 3 years later, you know.
Yeah.
So this is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let us go to line one and bring in Michael Martin. Michael, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Where are you?
I'm down in New Orleans. I've got a little bit of a throat rasp from yelling last night.
Who are you yelling at? I'm sorry, I was asking, who are you yelling at?
Oh, I had an opening night last night of a show called The Front Man, which nobody up there in Chicago is going to get to see for a while. And I have a habit on opening nights of calling out the actors and the musicians by name. So this was a large cast show, and by the time I was done yelling everybody's names for their bows, I was kind of raspy. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm looking forward to Wednesday.
I am looking forward to Wednesday, too. I'm sorry I can't be there for it, but I will be back before you finish your run. I hope we get to do a couple pieces together.
That would be really fun. Now, Michael Martin is a creator of a piece that's opening in Chicago, again, because it ran...
A year and a half.
Yes. And how long ago was that now?
That was, oh, God, I'm so poor on dates. I'm going to say that run was probably 2003 through early 2005, I'm thinking. We'd have to call Vicky Quadi up and ask her what the actual dates were. But yeah, it was... It opened shortly after I relocated to New Orleans, and I relocated down here in 2002. So 2003 through 2005.
Well, why are you in New Orleans when all the action's up here in Chicago?
Oh, God, like, I'm jealous. I can hardly stand it. I love New Orleans.
Yeah, that's way too much story, Mike.
We don't need that story, right?
At the Royal George.
Right, at the Royal George.
That was the long run. It started in 97 as a monthly event at the Red Lion Pub. It's appeared off and on over the years for 10 years.
And now you've done it in other places in the country.
So far we've managed New Orleans, of course, Seattle, Minneapolis, New York. Productions are coming up in Detroit and... Baton Rouge, although that's kind of a side project to New Orleans. Detroit, Baton Rouge, and I'm talking to a place in Portland.
Mr. Franchise here.
I'm trying. I'm really trying.
And it's called Verbatim Verboten.
Yes.
The Words You Long to Hear. Well, first of all, you got to explain what it is, and then I want to know, how does one come up with this idea?
Okay. Let me see. The Verbatim Verboten is real... what a lot of people now would call found theater.
Found theater.
Yeah, that's actually become almost a sub-genre of modern stage work. Found theater, staged performances, staged readings of illegally or illicitly recorded conversations, preferably among famous and powerful people. Although we have a lot of civilian conversations.
Yeah, you
well.
got a few wacky 911 calls and things like that in there.
Yes. It's not anything that, I mean, there's nothing, variations of verbatim verbon have been done. I'm aware of other shows that have taken similar approaches to producing an evening. What's interesting about this one, I think, is the range of material. We have a huge catalog of these pieces now that we've collected. And if I could get vague, the sensibility of the show, which is kind of covertly political, covertly satiric, but mostly just about having fun. The show does promise to do the transcripts as close to word for word as we're able to recreate them. We don't clean them up or pretty them up.
Right, which is why that no one under 16 will be admitted.
Yes, yeah, that, yeah, because that's.
There's some language there.
Yeah, I admit I get a little frustrated running up against that roadblock once in a while because these kinds of things leak into the public mostly to embarrass someone. The show does tend to be either, you know, people being, you know, inappropriately vulgar or people being inappropriately rude. So we have to be careful about that balance. A lot of the transcripts are somebody blowing their top or somebody trying to get somebody else into bed. So you gotta distribute that around a little
trying
bit.
To get somebody
well, it wouldn't be verboten if it wasn't like that.
No, of course it wouldn't. And we've loosened it up over the years. Well, when I started in 97, I was very strict about, you know, one of the two participants in the conversation had to not know that they were on being taped. But as the show has developed, we include emails, you know, on mic bloopers, a couple pieces of private correspondence that were made public. We've slowly loosened up the definition of what passes as a performable transcript to include other things than just somebody's got a bug on them or in their phone.
Well, so, we should give people at least some idea of some of the things you've come across. I mean, for instance, one of the pieces is Orson Welles and a couple of commercial producers, and he's trying. They're trying to direct Orson Welles, for God's sake. Okay,
that is one of the show's favorites, and that is also one that of course I don't know when he died. I think it was 72.
No, he died in the like 85.
85? He lived that
Yeah,
long.
Yeah, he yeah, yeah. In fact, that. Yeah. You well, you got to read your own scripts here, Michael, because I was looking at it, and it says right here at the top
it
of...
It sure does say that. I put those notes in there myself, and then forgot I put them in there. Well, that one was in circulation. That one is actually very popular. I recently ran across... They used that transcript, the original recording, I should say, not transcript. They used that original recording of that radio session in an episode of that old cartoon Pinky and the Brain. Do you remember that from a couple of years ago, the mouse who wanted to take over the world?
Oh, yes. Heather's
nodding like crazy.
I loved that show.
Yeah,
he had a total Orson Welles complex.
That was very pop culture. There are a lot of pop culture references in that cartoon. They actually picked up the original Welles recording that this transcript is taken from and wove it into one of the Pinky and the Brain's plans to take over the world.
that's pretty funny.
Yeah, Welles was near the end of his life. He was in Britain. He, like everybody else, had to keep working for a living, and he was recording frozen fish commercials in Britain up until about 3 weeks before he passed away. And the implication in the recording is that he knew his time was winding down. He was very difficult for these two fellows to deal with because recording fish commercials at the end of your life when you're a genius is probably not your first choice way of spending your time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. And they have a whole thing about beef and where the, yeah,
yes.
And the, what emphasis you should put on words and that sort of thing. Other things you have, of course, what show like this would be complete without Richard Nixon?
Richard Nixon is my spiritual godfather. I came of age in the 70s. Watergate was the first major news story I covered. I have an obsession with Richard Nixon that continues to this day. And the man never had a normal, hey, how are you doing conversation in his entire life. Every time he opened his mouth, it was tortured and weird. So he's, yes, every verbatim verbatim production that I'm part of includes at least one piece from Tricky Dick. He's our guiding light.
He must be. I'm amazed that you've got something from Mark Sanford.
That we got to keep the show fresh. 2009 was a good year. was a good year for new material. There's Blagojevich, of course. Blagojevich might be 2008, but there's Blagojevich. There's Sanford. There's quite a few people who have had one embarrassing conversation or another leaked to the internet in the last 16 months, and as much as we can, we try to incorporate that into the show. The show's rules do mean some limitations. If a story does not include a transcript of this sort, we don't do what's in the news simply because it's in the news.
Oh no, you can't do that. You have to have the dish here. You got to have the deepest, darkest, most embarrassing part of whatever it is.
And honestly, some news items, like people will say, where's so-and-so? Where's, for to take probably the biggest recent example, Tiger Woods, the conversations themselves aren't that interesting. The 911 call, it's there, I've got it, but I'm not sure, other than its topical value, how much fun it would be to perform. So a lot of stuff that you wouldn't expect to be part of the show is, simply because the conversations are entertaining. We still do Lewinsky and Tripp once in a while, just because their chats were so funny. That story is about 12 years old, and other stuff that's right up to the. It's not a new show. The other stuff that's right up to the moment sometimes doesn't get included, simply because the material that's available is. Oh, okay. Well, we knew that. So it's got to be entertaining as well as be secret.
Oh yeah, and you're right. I think it's a very important point that the conversations have to at least be interesting. And with Tiger Woods, I think we're waiting for the more interesting one to come out. Something will appear, and then it'll be right for this. By the way, if you just tuned in. To the Mike Novak Show. I'm talking to Michael Martin, who's a creator of a theater piece called Verbatim Verboten. And
you pronounce that so nicely. Verboten, you've got it just
yes, right. You know, I got chastised on this by Kathleen, who studied German. I studied French, and so I didn't. But she said, it's Verboten.
Yes.
And I think it's absolutely the best title ever for a theater piece.
Oh, well, thank you.
It's
yeah.
Verbatim, Verboten, The Words You Long to Hear. It opens next Wednesday. And by the way, those of you listening, no, it has nothing to do with gardening or horticulture or environment or green living. No, it's just because I'm in it. That's why I'm doing this. It's my radio show. I'm plugging it. And
Wednesdays at 7 o'clock at Hamburger Mary's in Andersonville.
Right, it's Mary's Attic at Hamburger Mary's, and I've
Attic,
got the
yes.
link. I've got the link on my website. This week's show. I don't know if you saw it, but I posted something on the Facebook page last night.
Yep.
That maybe you've gone.
Yeah, I'm gonna get on that old internet today and start getting the word out from down here in New Orleans. Yeah, you've got a great cast of people to work with in the show.
And as a matter of fact, one of the great cast is on line two, who was supposed to be here in the studio today. And why are you not here in the studio, mystery actor guest?
Because I overslept.
You over?
Oh, I love that. I almost did too. I had to be pushed around a little bit a half an hour ago.
What are you theater people or something?
Yeah, sometimes.
We were gonna perform something, and there he goes. Just like some of us have to be here, and what are you gonna do?
I know. I'm sorry.
You owe me, pal.
My son just got back from Sweden, and so there's a lot of changes around here. We're rushing around the airport and stuff, so I'm sorry.
That's okay. It happens.
But I'll be happy to come on next week live.
That's, by the way, so you know who blew me off. That's Richard Henzel. And by the way, he's part of the cast. It includes Mitch Salm, Connie Anderko.
Mm-hmm.
If I pronounce any of these wrong, let me know, because I know you...
Anderko,
see? I hardly know them myself.
Veterans in this group.
Yes, because some of them are veterans of this. Brian Nemtusek,
mm-hmm.
Richard Henzel, Sarah Jo Buffington, Warren Levon, and of course yours truly, Mike Novak, and hosted by Lance Baker.
Yes.
Lance is
the point man on this production, Chicagoans. Lance is the go-to guy for verbatim verboten. I'll be up for a guest appearance, but this production is his. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Good morning, Michael.
So when I hang up with you guys, you can just go back to sleep if you want. I mean, it's all right with me.
No, I'm awake now.
I'm wide awake.
Great. Now you are.
That moment of like, that really wakes you up in the morning when you realize you're
Once that hits you, you're wide awake.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That'll do it.
You couldn't go back to sleep if you did wake up in time to do what you said you'd do.
Do you have any good bits like that in the show, like people making excuses for things they missed or being caught with their mistress?
A lot of office stuff. We have that. That's also been a rich news source for the show since it first started. There's lots of excuse me, there's that rasping I told you about. There's lots of office fiascos, primarily via email, because one person in the conversation forgets and hits reply all rather than just reply. So there's a number of office-based diatribes, workplace stuff that plays really funny.
And it seems to me that every week we will have some new ones because of the way the news cycle is going these days.
I have some new material that I will be sending to you and to Mike and to Lance just as soon as I finish my coffee and get back on the laptop, you guys.
So maybe we'll even have it. Now, how many pieces do you have altogether right now in your library?
I think right now, I exaggerate it sometimes. I think right now it's a little bit over 400.
Wow.
I sometimes claim it's as much as 600, but I don't think it's
that high. Let's do a long evening, Michael.
That's what I was going to say. We're going to do all 600 pieces starting Wednesday.
Only about 100 or maybe 150 of them are in regular rotation. There was a period there when I was putting the show together for the first few times where I just took any transcript, whether or not it was actually entertaining or not. There's a lot of stuff that is part of the catalog, but doesn't get performed very often.
What is the one piece that, if there is such a thing, Michael, that showed up that you managed to track down that you're proudest of?
Oh, golly, I haven't been asked that question before. Of this current edition, and I should mention just briefly, I don't want to make the conversation too complicated. Of this current edition, we started with an all-star special guest night in December.
Right.
That's how you and I met, Mike.
Yeah, I was not able to go because I was gigging elsewhere that night. But, yeah, you had like 1,000 actors on stage at once.
We had 1,000 actors in Chicago on stage. About 150 of them are still mad at me.
who never made it, who never got on, right.
And it was meant to be a deluxe edition to reintroduce the show to Chicago. So there were a lot of people who very kindly donated their time. And in that evening, I would say, this may cause you to blanch, but I would say in that evening, the one that caught the spirit of the show best, even though it wasn't necessarily the funniest piece, was the Mark Foley text messages with the page that he had the crush on. The two actors who did that were very, very good, and the piece was simultaneously funny and disturbing, which is really the line that verbatim verboten likes to be on when it can manage it.
All right.
I was surprised we weren't all familiar with that particular piece.
Yeah.
But it didn't make the headlines, amazingly enough.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. Richard, I will have words with you on Wednesday when
I
see you.
Yes, sir. Bring a map.
I will bring an alarm clock.
You're in trouble, Richard. I've been there. You're in big trouble.
That's right. She has been down this road a couple of times. Michael Martin, we will try to do your pieces justice.
Yeah, I just got to mention before you send us away, Richard there on the other line does the best Orson Welles that I have heard in 10 years of doing this show.
And had he gotten up in time, we would have heard it on the radio today.
Well, the people can still hear it live. The show is running, I think, for 6 Wednesdays over there at Mary's Attic. Is that right?
That's it. 6 Wednesdays starting the 13th of January. And you can get tickets at Brown Paper Tickets. I've got the link right on my page. So everybody go to MikeNovak.net. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We'll
too,
talk
guys.
Soon.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See, you're not the only one.
Yeah.
Heather?
I want to go. I want to see this.
All right. You know you got to come by. Now, here are some facts from the care of trees. Trees lose, we might as well get back into horticulture. Trees lose between 70% and 95% of their root mass when transplanted. As a rule of thumb, it takes transplanted trees 1 year for every caliper inch of trunk diameter to regenerate root mass. According to researchers at the Morton Arboretum, over 80% of all landscape tree problems originate below ground, including insufficient rooting space, poor soil drainage, soil compaction, roots severed during transplanting or construction, and root diseases. Young mulch trees are better able to establish roots and can grow as much as twice as fast as unmulched trees. Root tips grow throughout the year, even in winter. Did you know that? Except during very hard freezes. Roots grow as long as the ground is warm. Hey, make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the care of trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. The care of trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
DR Services Unlimited has been providing Chicago's North Shore with award-winning remodeling and design-build services since 1991, giving their clients top-quality service and real value. They're on the cutting edge of green building technology, helping clients make their home more energy efficient without sacrificing beauty or function. If you want to make your home more energy efficient, simply want to add a room or renovate, call DR Services at 847-998-1687 or visit them at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Speaking of those guys, get in here. You got 30 seconds. Come in and come on, Joe Builder. Get in here. Get in here.
He's trying to seduce me and he's really just
freaking me out.
He's freaking you out because he's trying to seduce
he's
you.
He's trying to seduce me through the window and it's coming off as a little scary.
Say something interesting in 20 seconds.
Something interesting in 20 seconds.
Is that even on?
I don't know. You tell me.
Did you hook up that special?
Running the board
Why
there?
Are you guys using a crappy microphone? Now you got 10 seconds.
thank you, Mr. Novak.
This is what happens. Mighty House with Joe Builder and Ron Cowgill, not necessarily in that order, is next. On,
yes, necessarily in that order.
Soft Serve Sunday on Chicago's Progressive Talk. You can always go to MikeNovak.net.
Soft Serve.
Yep, to get any information. I will see you next week.